Hey, everybody, thanks for tuning in to the Comedy at the Carlson Cast. Today, I want to say thanks to our great friends. How about Chef Joe over at Sapori Cafe and Catering? They're located inside of the Powers Building Atrium downtown and have the best lunch specials you're going to find in Rochester. And to top it off, they can cater your very own special event. Visit at Sapori Rochester on Instagram and find them on Facebook for more information. You could also check out our good friends over at Three Heads Brewing. Jeff and the boys over there make the finest beers you're going to find this side of the Genesee River. And they also have an amazing, amazing brewery with live music just about every night of the week. Check out threeheadsbrewing.com for more information there. And we also want to say thanks to our friends at Iron Smoke Whiskey. Always remember to drink responsibly, but they make delicious stuff. They make Rattlesnake Rosie's Apple Pie Whiskey and a traditional Applewood Smoked Whiskey. Visit ironsmokewhiskey.com or you can visit their tasting room on Parse Avenue in Fairport. So, thanks, sponsors. Now it's time for a show.
Welcome back, everyone, to an all-new Comedy at the Carlson Cast. That's carlsoncast.com. Your host tonight, it's a doughy delight. It's Vinnie Paulino, everybody.
I'm made of bread dough.
Brian Ball was arrested this morning on a morals charge. He's not here today.
Yay!
Very sad about that. But Ross Johnson is. He's filling in. He's a pretty nice guy. Everybody likes him and thinks he's also sexy. And, of course, a wonderful beardy guy, Cam Tiller, and with our guest, Dom Davidoff, everybody. It's a very special show.
It is a special show, and I'm going to give you credit for saying his name properly.
Thank you. I worked on that.
A lot of people just go Dov. It's Dove, like
Dove.
The bird. Dove
like
Davidoff.
That makes sense.
What an interesting guy. What an interesting guy, Ross. You're going to love this interview today.
I'm excited. There's
not a lot of people that I have the opportunity to talk to that are actually technically part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Okay.
And grew up in a junkyard.
that's an intersection of two of the most fascinating things possible.
Robert Downey Jr. had a house, to my knowledge.
Yeah.
So
I think he grew up in a home. Yeah.
Yeah, in a home.
Yeah.
So interesting stuff we're going to talk about today with Dov Davidoff, who is our headliner at Comedy at the Carlson this weekend. Thank you for tuning in to another episode. We do have some exciting news for you that I think you might just find interesting. If you are watching this on Facebook Live or YouTube right now, thank you very much. If you have thought about subscribing to the audio of the show because you just like an audio podcast, we have...
And frankly, not much to look at around here.
Solid point.
You know?
Solid point.
if you're going to intake the show, you know, while you're eating, while you're having lunch, you might want to do audio.
Right, and yeah. I'm actually thinking about putting that disclaimer in the front of the show. If you are eating, don't watch this.
Right.
We have a new outlet for the audio show. We are now on iHeartMedia. We're on the iHeartMedia app, boys.
Woo!
So you can get your favorite local radio if you're into that sort of thing, and our show. So, boy, that app must be terrible.
Yeah.
You can get all of these great things on the iHeartMedia app, and you could also get us on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, and Laughable. So that's a lot of great outlets.
You can't avoid us.
You cannot avoid us. But amazingly,
try as you might,
a lot of people are avoiding us.
Yeah.
So I guess you're wrong again.
They're working at it.
Johnson.
They're putting effort into it. So,
but our numbers have been good. We've been getting a lot of new subscribers. So we're really thankful to all of you who may have just found the show. Please rate and review. We appreciate that more than you know. And we had some good things happen at the club this week. I have to just highlight real quick. We did our Stand Up to Alzheimer's show the other night. Raised $2,000 for the Alzheimer's Association.
And that's amazing, yeah.
I was shocked. People were so generous. We had a great crowd at a great show. So thank you, everybody who came out to that. And all around, I couldn't be happier. We also have coming up, and Cam, I'm going to have you show my screen. If this would work. Or don't. Hold on. Here we go. Show my screen, Cam. We have to announce new Comic Night 4.
Oh.
It's a big deal because what's happening is, and I'm going to pause it right there with all the information on it, new Comic Night 4 is going to be Thursday, May 9th, okay? And we're doing it different this time. There's still going to be 20 spots. It's starting earlier. The sign-up is at 7 p.m. The showtime and the drawing for spots are both going to be at 7:30 p.m. So what we had been doing in the past is doing the drawing and then starting the show a little bit later. Not this time, baby.
Whoa.
If your name is getting called, you're on your way to the stage. It's going to be really fun and interesting. But The key here that I want everybody to realize is this is the last new comic night until the fall. And we're going to make a big announcement at this new comic night Thursday, May 9th. So put that on your calendar. And we are going to take a little bit of a break. And we're going to be right back with Dov Davidoff. And we're going to learn all about his junkyard exploits and what it's like to be an amazing comedian. And I really want to know what it's like to be part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
I want to know what it's like to live in a junkyard.
Come on. You don't have a clue? But didn't you spend a little time in the Southern Tier?
I want to share stories about living in a junkyard. Is
okay.
What I'm getting at.
Listen, I feel like maybe you should murder Dovins, take his life.
Oh, my God. That'd be so smart, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Nobody, just cut this part, please.
Stay tuned for a murder, everybody. We'll be right back.
I don't want this at the trial.
Upcoming promo. There it is. A minute, but first we want to tell you about our upcoming shows. This weekend, you still have chances to go see Dov Davidoff. Also, Saturday night in the Rickles Room, we have our friends Steven Rogers and Katie Zufo performing. Next weekend, May 2nd and 3rd, we have Fred Rubino in town. This is a big one, May 10th through the 11th, Robert Kelly. And then the next week, Jim Norton, May 17th through the 18th. Dana Goldberg will be here one night only, Sunday, May 19th. Mark Skippy Price from Family Ties will be here May 23rd through the 25th. Samantha Ruddy, May 24th through the 25th. Mark Norman will be here May 30th through June 1st. If you're a fan of The Bonfire, Dan Soder's going to be here June 6th through the 8th. Jim Florence is going to be here June 13th through the 15th. Jamie Lissau will be here June 20th through the 22nd. Nicole Byer will be here July 11th through July 13th. Hypnotist Chris Jones will be here one night only, July 27th. I told you folks, always have a stacked lineup here at Comedy at the Carlson. If you'd like to get tickets, visit carlsoncomedy.com or call 585-4-COMEDY. Now back to me and the show. Hello, everybody. We are back. Joining us in studio is our headliner. He is a comedian, he's an actor, and he's a author. You can check out his book, Road Dog, Life and Reflections from the Road as a Stand-Up Comic. Please welcome Dov Davidoff, everybody.
Yes, yeah. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
And by everybody, I mean me and Ross.
There Absolutely. You go.
And all of you watching on the Comedy at the Carlson Facebook page and on YouTube, don't forget, right now, feel free to text in your questions for Dov, 585-484-0265. Now, I have to kind of start at the beginning with you, Dov.
Yeah, sure.
Because you have one of the more interesting childhood rearings that I've ever heard of.
Yeah, it's a freak show.
Yeah, yeah. I want to hear that. I didn't know about any of this, and you were talking about this a little bit beforehand. Well, yeah. I'm fascinated myself now.
I want people to go buy your book. I really do, because your book...
People like it, yeah. People, you know, and some interesting people like it. It's gotten good reviews. Yeah,
yeah, it really has. Like, I've been reading... I haven't gotten it yet. I'm waiting for my hard copy to show up.
Yeah, yeah.
Not going to lie to you and tell you that I've read it already.
Yeah,
but I will be reading it, I promise you. Could you tell us a little bit about what it's like to grow up in a junkyard?
My mother was this hippie, like an Ivy League hippie WASP analyst from California, and she was on her way to teach piano in India when she stopped off to visit her friend. It was this lesbian woman who owned a monkey, and that woman was renting a house from my father, who was this...
This is good.
I love the startup already.
This is like a lot to...
So she's going to go teach piano
overseas. India, yeah.
And then her lesbian friend who has a pet monkey.
Yeah, lives in Jersey. And she stopped off to meet her friend. She met my father. My father's an uneducated Jewish business guy from the Bronx. And it was a real nutty operation. And even after they were divorced, they lived in the same house. So we all lived in the same house together while people were coming in and out. And then my mother was wrapped up very heavily on a commune in upstate called The Land. It was a cult. And they believed they were building earth integrated housing, and they're doing some hot coal walking. And there was an argument, I remember, about whose third eye was really open. But it was an apocalyptic kind of thing where they believed the world was coming to an end.
Ross complained that the Scientologists sent him stuff in the mail. So, like, you grew up on a commune with, like...
Yeah.
Firewalking, like walking on the hot
coals? But the problem wasn't the commune as much as it was I grew up in a working class town in Jersey, and then I had to reconcile going back and forth from a commune around people that couldn't possibly imagine. And so it was a very strange positioning, you know. And so, you know, you're in this working class town, or you're on a commune, but they're two entirely disparate worlds, you know. And yeah.
Okay. So yeah, I kind of relate to this a little bit.
Yeah.
I relate to this, and I grew up and my aunt had a church at
yeah.
her house.
Uh-huh.
And so it was a weird kind of, I don't like to use the word culty when it comes to family, but a little
yeah.
culty.
Yeah.
And so I kind of relate to that. And
yeah.
then, like, you go out into the world, and the world is a completely different place. But what you
yeah.
think is the absolute moral authority
yes.
on the way the world really is.
Yeah.
are a bunch of people walking on coals at your house.
yeah, yeah.
And you have to go into school, and you have to go everywhere else. And,
yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, like, did an adult ever come to you and be like, Dove, what's going on over there? What, like?
I don't know. I mean, the cult was in a different part of from where I lived. And so my challenge was, when you're on the cult, so are the other people. But when you're growing up in a junkyard in Jersey, you couldn't communicate about your experiences. There was no touchstone. There was nothing to say that people could relate to. It was, you were alone in that experience. I mean, there is no resonant community.
So, did you have trouble making friends?
Yeah. I had it was a wild scene early on, you know, being in this place, in this dirt driveway near a junkyard. But later on, I ended up becoming, you know, I was a little violent, and I ended up...
You acted out a lot because of this nonsense.
I did, you know, and so later on, you know, I became sort of well-known. But no, early on, I did not have many friends, yeah.
Did you relate to one more? I mean, did you feel more at home on the commune or in the junkyard? I mean, did you...
No,
was it complete,
the junkyard was more at home than
okay.
the commune, but... But it felt more normal because that's I was in a working class community. That's the environment I was in. But no, I was not at home anywhere.
Hmm.
No sense of time and place. It was not a reasonable environment for me.
That's not a reasonable environment for anybody, really.
Well,
yeah, I mean,
you know, if both of your parents, like, if your world is a working class world, like, there are some people for whom it would be a more reasonable place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just, it's two disparate worlds that you're growing up in that makes it strange and challenging. You know?
Okay, so, all right, there's a lot there.
Yeah,
I have to find this out about you. Like, stand-up comedy, at what point
yeah.
does this come into the equation for you? Like,
I was
were
in
you
my
a
early
fan?
20s. No, I never watched TV. It wasn't around me much. There was no pop culture. I remember we had a TV in the house. I remember seeing Miami Vice. I remember, like, seeing, like, no, I didn't grow up as a fan of pop culture in general. I don't know. I still don't know who a lot of people are and bands and things like that. I don't know much. I didn't know much about it. I mean, now, you know, I'm around the entertainment business so that I can pick up names and I know certain things, but I never developed a real interest in it. I still don't watch television or movies so much.
Did you ever, not to psychoanalyze you, but, you know, a lot of kids, like,
he's on the couch, Ross. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm on the couch.
That's a good point.
That's what couches are for.
You know, like, I moved around a lot when I was a kid, and I know
yeah.
a lot of people I know in situations like that, they sort of developed the, not necessarily the comedy, but sort of the sense of humor as a way
to
make new friends and defend
yeah.
or whatever it is. I mean, is
yeah,
that...
Yeah, sure.
Like
I would imagine. I think for me, it was just reconciling, for you know, the world, right? It's like you're trying to figure out how all of these pieces fit together, and they don't. None of them fit together.
None
ultimately.
Of them fit together, exactly.
And so what happens is it becomes, you know, you start to see through the prism more of paradox. And paradox and humor, I think, are often synonymous. And it's like, I was reading some Wittgenstein thing, who's a famous philosopher, and he said a good philosophical work, in theory, could consist purely of jokes because of the paradoxical nature of what's
right.
being communicated. But I
you
don't know. I mean... Yeah, humor helps.
I think humor helps.
Yeah.
I think that you were in a really unique, obviously in a unique position that not a lot of people have, but like when you go back and you look at it and you look at where you are now,
yeah.
I think that it probably made you more of a student of humanity than anything.
It does, you know. My brother ended up becoming a psychologist. It's like you try to reconcile your life as best you can, and so I think you start processing experience in a you know, in a way that, yeah, it's like you can go both ways. Like you can develop sort of a thicker skin while simultaneously there's a kind of sensitivity, you know, to the world.
And that's the paradox.
That's the paradox.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm learning a lot today.
Yeah, this got deep.
Usually we come in and we laugh and we have a good time, but today we're actually, you know, scratching the surface psychology of the
thing. Yeah, I mean, you're trying to find, I mean, for me, that's always what makes kind of processing time and space interesting, I guess.
So you said in your early 20s you were kind of exposed to stand-up for the first
time? Yeah. I was living in New York City from the time I was 16, 17, you know. I was thrown out of high school, and I was living with a friend, And I remember going to the Boston Comedy Club back then, and Marin was there and people were there, and I ended up.
What year are we talking about, just for reference?
My first year doing comedy was in the early '90s.
Okay,
so 95. I went up on stage probably, maybe 94, and Yeah, I mean, it was an interesting time. It was, you know, when I broke into the Cellar back then, I don't know, like Greg Giraldo was there, and, you know, Norton was still there, Patrice and those guys,
right.
And David Tell. And so it was a really interesting environment, you know, back then.
So
More interesting than it is now, I think.
Yeah, I think you're probably right there.
Yeah.
I think you probably are correct.
Yeah.
But let's take a step back here for a second. So you went to a couple comedy clubs, you checked out some shows.
Right.
Was there anything in particular that, like, spawned the transition from spectator to performer?
Oh, that's an interesting... Yeah, no, I was working on Wall Street at the time, and I was...
You were
I was 19.
I was just going to sit back and listen to you talk.
No, 2021.
How do you only have one book is my question.
Yeah, one book, yeah. Yeah, no, I don't have another one.
The Art of the Deal, too, by Dov Davidoff.
Yeah, The Art of the Deal, yeah. No, I was working on Wall Street, and then somebody asked me to do a show. That's really what it was. He was running his own show, and he asked me to do it, and I went up, and it was an interesting experience, you know. And
so you had like nothing prepared in your mind, really. Just somebody asked you.
He told me a couple of weeks beforehand, and so I tried to write a few things, you know.
But you had to have obviously expressed interest in wanting to perform.
No,
they thought I was funny.
Yeah, people thought that I was funny, but. So he asked me to do the show, but I had never thought about it. No,
this is interesting. So they give you a couple of weeks to prepare.
Yeah,
like you're not a big comedy fan. You're not somebody.
No,
who,
I'd
like,
only seen one show.
How do you prepare for that?
How do you even start? I mean,
you try to think of things that made some people laugh. That you know, or you're obviously going to be terrible, but it's. But I wasn't as terrible as the other people.
Well, I mean, when the guy's booking the show by just walking around his
office. Yeah, no, he was a friend of mine. He was sort of I was hanging out with some girl, and he was a friend of hers, and so that's how we ended up bumping into one another.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate this first outed?
5, because it wasn't terrible. I was bad, but I wasn't so bad that it felt like I got enough laughs where it felt like it wasn't a total, the fit was not unreasonable.
Right.
You know, and so it was like, oh, this kind of makes sense. It's a language I could possibly speak, that kind of feeling.
I think 5 for going up the first time without any preparation, that's...
Yeah, it was a 1 in terms of the quality of the comedy, but it was
a
5 in terms of...
I thought overall performance, 5 is very reasonable, and it's probably definitely above average for first time.
I think not being terrible in that situation is...
Yeah, if you're not terrible, that's a win. Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
It really is. So, like, after you do this show, you get off stage off of that, is something inside of you saying, this is for me?
Yeah, it was fun. You know, it's an interesting thing to I think so. I it's funny. I haven't processed that in a long time, but I think it made sense. And then also I was around some people in the Village who were actors, and a friend of mine was at Juilliard. He was a Russian dancer. And then the other person was an artist, a fine arts painter. And then... I got involved in this acting class studio thing while I was doing some stand-up. And, it was a way to process life, you know? I mean, Wall Street was, I just thought, I started doing reasonably well, you know? And I thought, I don't want to get locked in this box. This is not the kind of life that I'm looking for, you know?
So it was never something that you considered before.
Right. That's
and
right.
Now all of a sudden a whole new world of possibilities is open to you.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And it just felt it was an interesting experience, and you could process, you could have ideas, and then ultimately, what is most art about? I don't know. A lot of it's probably about feeling less alone. You know, you're alone with your ideas, and if life didn't always feel super comfortable, then you can get up and communicate with a room full of strangers, and suddenly, you know, you're valued in a different way, and you can communicate, and there's some resonance that you didn't have before you got up and wrote some shit that was funny, I guess.
And you could own, in a weird way, you kind of own your own trauma. Like,
yeah, I think that's a good way to say it. Yeah. I think so.
Because, you know, saying that you grew up kind of lonely, you know, you were there, you know, it gives you a lot of time and a lot of perspective.
Yeah.
And I think, in a way, people like you who've done it make the most interesting comics.
Yeah.
As opposed to the guys that are just like the great home life with mom and dad.
Yeah, and, you maybe. Know,
the
suburbs.
They could be funny, great joke writers,
sure,
whatever, but
yeah.
there's a perspective that a lot of people don't have when they first get into the comedy business, and a backstory behind them that informs
it does.
Their way
there's
of life.
A POV, you know. I mean, you know, probably a good place to start from if you want to get hooked on heroin too, you know. But
yeah.
It's
a New York comedy club, that'll do it.
New York comedy club, yeah, that will do it. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, if you're an outsider, by definition, you're seeing things that other people, you know, you're seeing things from an angle that other people aren't seeing, which is I think it probably doesn't hurt.
So you're off to the races.
That could be true. Yeah.
You're off to the races at this point.
You're off to the races. Yeah, doing comedy, and then, you know, I sort of got into this thing. I got a manager and went to Aspen, and then went out to L.A. and did one of those talk shows, and then I had a series and that kind of thing. And then, I mean, I mean, I'm a landlord in New York now. It's like, I got involved in business, too.
Sure.
And so I don't know. In between, you know, acting and then trying to develop my own stuff, and I've had a few pilots, but it's a strange business, you know, what goes, what pops, what doesn't, you know. I'm a shitty social media guy. I have no idea what I'm doing in that world, you know.
I always crack up every time I see you pop up on something.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
I'm a big nerd, as you could tell by this studio. You're in the Marvel Universe, my friend.
Marvel Universe.
You're in the
good.
Marvel Universe.
I like it.
I know two people in the Marvel Universe. You are one of them.
Yeah,
sir.
Yeah.
You and Eddie Clark are the only ones that
I
know.
There you go. It's the Marvel Universe.
That's it. So that's got to be, like, do people talk to you about that a lot? Or is it just another credit that you did? You're on the Punisher TV show for Netflix.
Yeah, sure, right. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, sometimes every now and then somebody brings it up. But, I mean, different things they see, you know. I mean, there's comedy stuff and then acting, you know. It's like, sure. I've been playing a cop for the last two seasons on that Shades of Blue. That's what I was doing
now,
in New York.
That's a pretty big show, isn't it?
I think they got between 5 and 10 million viewers.
I would say it's
viewers,
pretty damn
something
big show.
Like that.
Sounds good to me.
Pretty damn.
Yeah.
Pretty
I don't
damn
know, but not big enough to stay on the air. You know, canceled after three seasons. I mean, I think maybe Jennifer wanted to leave.
That's right. Jennifer Lopez was.
Yeah,
on
Jennifer
show.
Lopez wanted to leave and do something else. So I think maybe that's why they ended up going off the air.
Interesting. Now, do you fancy yourself more of a comedian or more of an actor, or you just, you are what you are and that's it?
No. I mean, I'm both, but comedy is more pure. It's pure. It's honest. It's you know, you got to write it yourself. You got to figure out how to do these things, you know? A set is, you know, somebody gives you a script and you have to interpret it, but it's not. It's not like stand-up comedy, you know? It's
okay.
You know, and it's also a much more collaborative experience. You know, I mean, frankly, for me, it's easier.
Acting's easier.
A script. Yeah, you get a script. You know where to go. You show up. And you understand what the job entails. It's not to say, like, to be a good actor doesn't take something. It does. But it's not brain surgery. That's for sure.
That's a very, very well put. Yeah. Because, you know, when you bring up it's more collaborative, there's nothing lonelier than stand-up.
Yeah, it's all you. Win, lose, or draw. There's no close set. There's nobody helping you. When you're on stage dealing with a fucking heckler, it's just you dealing with the world. On a set, you know, there's a, it's a vastly different environment. Right. It's a completely closed environment. It's totally controlled. You can usually do the take again. It is much softer on the human psyche.
So, I like that.
Yeah.
We just got a question from a viewer. Dove, okay. I was going to ask you this question a little bit later, but I usually will ask it now. I usually ask everyone this question. What advice would you give to somebody who's just getting into stand-up for the first time?
You got to try to find your own voice. I mean, one, you just got to get up and do it, which is hard enough. And then you figure out your own interests, you know, because you see people get up and they're watching some shit on TV that everybody else watch, and then they'll have some just general kind of joke about it. It's like, I don't know, you want to, I don't have any advice other than
get up and
do it, and then try to find your own voice. Read some interesting shit. Don't listen to what everybody else is up to, and then try to, you know, talk about things that you care about.
That was my favorite answer. I don't have any advice.
Yeah.
That's a good answer, though.
Advice is overrated. You show up. Be a decent person.
I feel like stand-up is a very unique experience to everyone. I feel like everybody's past very different, and I feel like everybody's voice should be very different.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, there aren't enough voices that are...
Yeah, I mean, it's like it's unfortunate because people ask, and it's like outside of just showing up and then not worrying too much about whether or not you did well, you know, it's like, how do you give somebody advice on this thing? It's like, yeah,
be funny, just leave you alone.
Yeah, be funny and try to be funny in your own voice and think about stuff you care about. Read some good shit that other people aren't talking about. You know, read. Mm-hmm. Interesting things and watch interesting things and then
philosophy. It's one of those things,
philosophy,
you know.
Yeah, is good.
I mean, you know, I'm a writer, and it's one of those things where it's like you can tell people how you did it, you know, and what you do, and that can be useful,
right.
But then, you know, people will get into that advice. They'll get into the, oh, this is how so and so did it.
That's
this
right.
is how I'm going to be rich and famous, and then you become at best you become
that's
a
exactly
copy
right.
of somebody
yeah.
better, you know.
Yeah, no, it's not a traditional track. You know, you got to find your own voice, and that's a journey.
So, in all of the years since the early '90s, I mean, coming up doing comedy in New York with the people that you did comedy with, I'm sure that there's been a lot of very interesting things that happened. But when you first started, how tough was it to get stage time in New York in the early 90s?
It was hard. You had to go to these open mics, and you know what open mics are like. I mean, and then it's the same people you see at the open mic every week, but it did force you to write a little bit more. And then, there's that track. And then even when you break into one club, it's these late nights. You get pieces. I used to go and try to get stage time. And the New York Comedy Club used to have this show in a hallway. It was Puerto Rican night on Tuesdays, I think.
In the hallway?
It started at 11:30. It was basically a hallway that they put chairs in. And then it was a Puerto Rican show.
God, I love comedy clubs. They're like, we're going to have another show. Right? Like, wherever they can grab people,
that's
they
right.
will.
Mm-hmm. And the dude, the super from the building, the superintendent of the building, wanted to do comedy. He ran this Puerto Rican. Anyway, I used to go up as Dove Dominguez for 7 minutes of stage time. I had to change my last name because it was a Puerto Rican show. But yeah, no,
Dove Dominguez, really?
Yeah, Dominguez. I went up as Dove Dominguez.
Lady comedian night.
Yeah, no, I never did the cross dress thing, but it's like
just add an E to your name.
Yeah, why not? Go
Dove
ahead.
Davidoff.
Hop up. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's New York was an interesting time then. You know, it's like the city was still really transitioning into whatever it's become.
Now, around that time, you know, and I could be mistaken, it's a little before my time in the business, the comedy boom of the 80s had died down.
Yeah.
And it was starting to, like, fizzle out a little bit, like, at that point, wasn't it?
I think so. I mean, I wasn't aware of that because it was just in open mics and then in some New York City comedy clubs. So whether or not the club was hot or it wasn't hot, I mean, I wasn't on those shows anyway. And so then I did Aspen Comedy Festival and then went did Montreal and then went out to LA, that kind of thing. And then I ended up breaking into the Cellar and the Cellar was, that was an interesting time then, you know, that was a real, I think it was a bit of a heyday back then for that table at the Cellar, which is probably what its reputation is largely built on now.
We have a question from our friend Chris. He wants to know, has the staff of nightclubs treated you differently since your episode of crashing?
That's funny. No, everybody's still okay.
Everybody's still okay.
Yeah, I'm not attacking waitresses in the green room. No.
Nobody's a little nervous about around you anymore?
I don't think so.
All right.
I don't think so.
Good question, Chris. Thank you for watching. Yeah. So to go back to this, the 90s, and that was a hell gig to you, was the hallway?
Hallway was not fun. But, yeah, I mean, it was fine. You know, like, you try not to get too emotionally caught up in any of those experiences. I mean, you want enough feedback to determine whether or not the material is funny and relatable. It is sure. Comedy. You got to make somebody laugh at some point. But you can't take too much away from some of that stuff, you know. I mean, sometimes the guys that do well were just people that were yelling the word fuck loud enough, and, you know, they'd get a laugh and then walk around thinking it was good. So it was like, you know, whereas other people that had a more quiet demeanor may not do as well, but their jokes were better.
Do people tell you that you're kind of a soft-spoken guy, like, offstage?
Every now and then, yeah. I don't know. It all depends on the environment, you know.
All right. Yeah. I'm just curious. Go ahead.
What kind of a time frame are we talking? And I'm just curious. This detail is fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, you're obviously hitting the high points, but what kind of time frame are we talking about between, you know, you going to this first open mic and then feeling like you were, it's sort of nebulous, but feeling like you were starting to hit? I'm sort of curious because I think five years
after the first open mic, something along those lines was doing, like getting into a festival. 5 years.
So you put in time.
Yeah, I mean, that's like doing a festival and then starting to get enough stage time around people that had, you know, could do an hour. And then you'd see Attell cruising around and Greg Giraldo and those guys. And so then you start breaking into the cellar and then doing late night spots and, you know, that kind of thing.
So for those of you watching that, just put that in perspective. You know, thank you for breaking that down because I was going to ask that, too. 5 years.
That's
a lifetime for a lot of people, and that's a lot of no's and a lot of hard work in 5 years.
Yeah, no, listen, I mean, you're lucky after 5 years if you have a decent
15.
10, 12, 15. Yeah, it's like, yeah, I mean, I don't know, people develop their voice, and then it takes years to develop a voice. It's an arduous process. Right? It's arduous.
You got to strip yourself down, I think.
Yeah.
You have to, like, strip yourself down and reconstruct yourself and just find the humor in your own experience. And maybe that's the advice today.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like Hell Week for the Navy SEAL kind of thing, except it lasts longer and it's not, you know, it's just you got to go through all that and you got to take the hits and then.
So to go back to whoever asked that first question, the advice is do a lot of push-ups, get yelled at by people. And, there you go.
Well,
Hell Week.
And I like the thing, too. I mean, it's not, you know, I like what you said, too, and it's not advice so much, but I think that's seems to be a key thing of knowing when to take the feedback and knowing when to ignore. I think that's got to be even harder today with the social media stuff because you're getting so much feedback.
Yeah, you
got to
tune a lot of that shit out because if we don't determine from our own perspective what's funny, you know, you just end up, what are those politicians, those focus groups? You can't focus groups. Your jokes, you won't have a voice.
Well, you kind of have to, but it's best to do it through your own.
You have to insofar as determine what's funny in your own voice, and then you let the crowd tell you what's good and what isn't. That's your group. Mm-hmm. But you don't want people online, you know, that are offended determining what you talk about.
Right. I'm going to say you're welcome, Mike Bellomio, for asking your question. You just sent us a thank you.
There you go. Thank you, Mike.
Always got to be nice to the viewers. You guys are the best. We love you. So, Dove, you have a very interesting perspective on this. You have an interesting upbringing.
Right.
One of the things that you talked about, one of the tags for your book, is you talk about the dark side of the road.
Yeah, sure. When you're out there alone, depending on what your demons are individually, right? It's like, It's a strange environment because you're doing the show. You're in front of a lot of people. There's a lot of energy. Your peak energy level is 11:30, 12 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. And then afterward, it's like, what do you do? What do you do with all of that energy? What do you do? You've been alone all day long. You've been traveling alone. And then, you know, it's, I think, why there's so much vice on the road, drugs, sex, and alcohol. I think, you know, you have all of this energy. What, are you going to go to the library at midnight? I mean, either you're going to go back to a hotel room and stare at your own reflection, you know, or whatever, go on online or watch TV. Or you're going to spend time in the only social environment that you're going to be a part of until 24 hours, until the next night at 8 p.m. or whenever things start. Yeah. And so it's a pressured environment for the human animal psychically. And then also, if you have any demons, you know, which many people that
they're made available to you a lot by the audience at times. Like, people walk up to you, hey, what do you want? What are you looking for?
There's always that thing. And then people that want to hang out late at night are not usually the ones that are getting up early the next morning. They're the ones going out and doing some blow or getting into whatever. It's like, so if you're looking for trouble, you're going to find it. And I used to go to a lot of girls. I think that was a vice, you know, just mm-hmm. that constant, you know. Just in and out of these places, and you begin to feel like a ghost after a while. It's these late nights, and you're at the bar, and another drink, you get up, you feel like shit, and then it's not a healthy life without discipline.
It's not.
No.
A lot of comics have disappeared.
Yeah,
off of the
no
earth.
Doubt about it.
It's really...
Yeah.
I appreciate that you try to talk about that, because it's one of those things where a lot of people... It's comedy. Think of it as like a Scorsese movie. It's kind of like Goodfellas. Right. You see all of like the glitz and the how great it is and everything like that. But then there's like the dark side.
Oh,
it goes south.
Good and dark.
It goes real dark.
It gets real dark. Yeah.
Not that I'm asking for specifics. Is there anything that in particular that made you realize this?
I write about it in the book. You know, it's not one incident. It's more this drift where you feel like if you don't make some changes or develop some type of discipline, you're gonna go down this path of trying to fuck some whoever will have you at 1 a.m, which is usually a shitty, intoxicated experience. You don't feel good about it the next day. There's a systemic kind of collapse on a spiritual, psychic level after a while. It's a lot of fun early on, and then when it's not as fun, you got to be able to make a shift. Otherwise, you end up as a cautionary tale.
You seem like a very self-aware individual.
You try.
Well, I think you probably are more than most, but let me ask you this. Have you thought of things in your own life that you use to kind of protect yourself from that? I mean, how have you dealt with it?
I got married, you know, lots of therapy, lots of couples therapy, lots of trying to get along with somebody who has their own fucked up background. Now I have a kid, so it's an entirely different level of responsibility
that
for
changes,
me.
It changes your life big time.
It does, yeah. And if it doesn't, it should. And so it's, it's like you start to just growing up, you know? I mean, I remember I was standing in front of the Comedy Store when I'm trying to write a joke about it, but like I had this nightmare. I really fucked things up with my ex, who was a great gal.
Okay.
And I had this sort of nightmare that I'd be standing in front of the Comedy Store in LA and it would be dark and raining, and then she would be on the other side of the Sunset Strip, but it would be light on her side and sunny, and she'd be walking along licking ice cream with a husband and a kid, and she would see me, and then I would have like an open shirt with a gold medallion, and she'd hear me trying to convince some stripper I know people with good coke, and I saw that vignette and I thought, I do not want to be that guy, you know, like I want to lead a more holistically, holistic in the sense of new age,
right.
Whole meaning three-dimensional, a kind of a life that has reasonable underpinnings and a foundation. And I ended up trying to fucking put the pieces together, you know.
I really think that should be the title of your next book.
Putting the pieces together?
You know, I just totally lost when you said that. That's actually pretty good. Yeah. But having a semblance of a normal life.
Yeah. Trying to get the underpinnings together of something that feels like you can develop a foundation, you know. And
that's got to be extra hard because, again, the childhood, not even necessarily having a real normal childhood and now trying to find that in your adult life has got to be fulfilling to you. But also, you know, a little more difficult.
I think it's everybody's journey to try to get comfortable with themselves and their environment. But it's like, it's more challenging. But it's why statistically, if you come from certain environments, you're less likely to have certain types of success, whether it be interpersonal or marriage or whatever. It's like, you know, you don't develop the right skill set coming from certain environments. And so you got to go in and do a lot of work to acquire it.
Do you feel lucky in having made that change in terms of, I mean, do you feel like it was luck and sort of an evolution of yourself that you were able to live a more whole life? Or was it something that you decided one day, you know, you were talking about the sort of image you had, which is very, you know, very on the nose, you know?
You painted a picture. You painted a picture there.
You did paint a picture there. Absolutely. Yeah.
No, that's a good question. I mean, rephrase it again.
Well, I mean, I guess I'm curious about, you know, at what point or you know, you sort of answered this, but what point or what was it something in your personality all the way through got you to a point where you were like, I am not a person
There's
who's going to live
be
like
some
this forever?
Spirit. Or? Yeah, you have components of the, we all have some voice, unless you're a complete sociopath. It's like, there's the devil angel thing on everybody's shoulder saying, you know, you'd be better off if you do this, but you got to find out how to create a dialogue between the voice you want to listen to. And so after a while, it's just not as satisfying. Yeah. You know, it's like, I met my first girlfriend in a threesome. You know, it's like after a while, it's just.
That's how I met Vinny.
It's not as satisfying. Yeah, you know what happens.
He wasn't invited.
People isn't that a knock, apparently.
Just show up at places.
Yeah, he's a weird kid.
Yeah.
He's a weird kid to have around. Dove, I really want to say thank you for coming in
this
morning.
Yeah, sure. More than welcome,
man.
It's fun.
I'm looking forward to 4 more shows this weekend.
Yeah.
I'm going to performing with you tonight.
Yeah.
You can get your tickets now, carlsoncomedy.com or 5854comedy. Come see us tonight. We're going to have a lot of fun. And if you've never seen Dove Live, this is a really cool show. You're going to have a
We're
going to
do the right thing. Come on out.
We're going to do the right thing.
The right thing.
All right,
we're
Dove.
Going to bed at a reasonable time.
And,
exactly.
And we're going to behave ourselves after the show.
That's right.
One drink, maybe two, that's it. Then we're done.
Oh, man, we got another question. I was going to amp it up, but this is a good one. Okay. What was the genus... your inspiration for your character on Crashing? How much of it was how much of you was in that character, specifically the club episode from the last season?
Right. Good question.
Yeah. I don't know. Probably a little bit. No, I mean, the lack of self-awareness is not me, but there's kind of a forward-driving energy that the guy has that I relate to, but it's, like we all have little pieces of a character, you know, but he... But you got to drop all the self-awareness. So he's a guy that gives this definitive advice, you know, and a lot of it comes from insecurity, and he's always very sort of windy, and so I don't
You've
share
that
with him.
You've met guys like that, though, in the comedy
yeah,
world.
Yeah, right,
there's a million of them.
You've met guys like that, and so, you know, you take whoever you are and then acquire these other components to create the character, but that guy is we've met guys in clubs that give this specific advice or just have stupid things to say that they, on some self-righteous, like they believe it's real.
And I love how, like, when somebody asks you for advice, like, there's no advice.
Yeah, like there are little pieces. If the question were really specific, then you could get into advice. The overall picture, it would be hard because it's so broad.
All right. Now another door is open. I was going to let you walk out of here. Yeah. One last question for me. What is the dumbest advice you've ever gotten from somebody?
The dumbest advice. That's a good one. The dumbest advice. It's funny. I can't think of a piece of advice. I've experienced so many stupid things. there's so many. Club owners.
I've experienced so many stupid things.
Yeah. I mean, how do you choose one? Right. It's like asking a pitcher. You know, like what was the. Do you remember one throw that differentiated itself from the other thousands of throws?
Right.
Millions. Just people making observations about the world that didn't add up. In terms of actual advice that was stupid, I don't know. I can't remember a specific piece of advice. I wish I had something interesting.
Well, if you're
smart enough, you learn from the dumb shit too, right?
Right.
I mean, you know.
Absolutely.
You
can learn
like,
from everything around you.
Here's some comedy advice. When you meet anyone who acts like Dove's character did on Crashing, do the opposite.
Yeah, do the opposite.
Do the opposite. You'll
be
all
right. The opposite of what that guy does,
and
right?
You'll be all right.
Yeah.
All right, Dove.
That's right.
Appreciate having you, man.
Okay.
We're going to be right back with Stand Up News with Ross, and stay tuned, everybody.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
You too, man.
We'll be right back.
Thank you for being awesome and watching another episode of the Carlson Cast. Don't forget we're streaming live on Facebook and YouTube every Friday morning. You could also follow us on social media on Twitter and Instagram at CarlsonCast. You can listen anytime on iTunes, Google Play, and we're now available on Spotify. You should also check out an amazing app called Laughable. And on the Laughable app, you can connect to your favorite comedians in a way you never thought you could before. Download it in the App Store and visit CarlsonCast.com for information on more shows. And don't be a jerk. Rate and review. Well, I think it's time for one of my favorite parts of the show, the segment right before we get to go home. Joining us back again, sitting on the couch, back and forth for you today, huh, Ross?
I'm all over the place.
Ross Johnson on the news. How
I
you doing, bud?
I have two chairs. I'm good. I'm good.
It's
I'm
good.
All right. It's spring, sort of.
It is.
You
it
know?
Is. So would you tell me what we got going on today in the world of stand-up comedy?
Okay, so a couple big things going on. So there's been a – this has been brewing for a couple years now, but there's a joke theft lawsuit against Conan O'Brien by a guy named Robert Alexander Caseberg, who claims that Conan O'Brien and his writers and the staff of the show a few years back
– is really a short – man with brown hair.
<It's> really.
And he stole his whole lanky ginger gimmick.
His whole thing, yeah. It's actually Conan the Barbarian.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
this guy's suing O'Brien. He's suing the show. He alleges that Conan O'Brien and his writers and the producers took several jokes from the guy's Twitter account.
Because the guy just was like, had masturbating bears all over his
Twitter.
All over
the place. All over the place.
That's an old school Conan reference.
That's very old school. Does anybody, young people in the back, do you get that?
No, they're all old. We're all old.
So the guy's seeking $450,000 in damages. That's going to go to trial May 28th in San Diego. Do you care? Do you want to hear a couple of the jokes?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I'm fascinated by this always.
Okay, so these are from, I think these are all from 2015. So the first one is, a Delta flight. This is the guy's Twitter.
So this guy claims that they went on his Twitter account,
right,
and just stole his scary genius.
Correct.
Okay.
A Delta flight this week took off from Cleveland to New York with just two passengers, and they fought over control of the armrest the entire flight. And then the Conan O'Brien joke was, on Monday, a Delta flight from Cleveland to New York took off with just two passengers, yet somehow they spent the whole flight fighting over the armrest.
Interesting.
I mean, they're similar. I don't know why you'd steal that.
I guess I have a lot of questions here, okay. and I'm not like the judge or the jury, and you might not have answers for me.
Sure.
And if you don't have answers, myself and the audience are going to be very disappointed in you.
Absolutely.
Okay, first question.
Yeah.
Was Conan or the show or the staff writers following this guy on Twitter?
That I don't know, and I would say I don't know in the sense that not just that I don't know, but that's not something that that's a detail that I was sort of looking for and couldn't find. So
okay.
I don't know if that's...
Next question. Yeah. How many Twitter followers does this lunatic have?
No, and that is a good... You know what? I'm going to find out right now.
So keep talking. You did do your research.
I did. I'm doing it right now.
Perfect.
I mean...
I think that it's best to do your research in the middle of the thick of things.
Absolutely.
So...
Keep talking.
Okay, though that joke is close. I'm not going to argue that's pretty close. But one of the things that people don't know about the Tonight Show and all these late night shows.
Currently, 2,636 followers.
I bet you Conan unfollowed him when he sued him.
Is followed by 2,185, which means
tag
your usually means most of your most of your followers are people who just follow you back.
Right.
So.
Okay.
Don't sue us, please. I'm just saying.
Did you hear about that flight from Cleveland?
Pointing out the facts.
Okay, yep. So here's what I want to say about this.
Yeah.
One of the things that people don't realize is that the writers for The Tonight Show, the writers for Conan, the writers for all these late night shows are not necessarily in-house. One of the industry things that happens is you can submit jokes. Like there's a guy I know, Moody McCarthy, used to submit to David Letterman's show.
Okay.
From Syracuse, I believe. And he got a lot of jokes on the air, and when they would do jokes that he submitted, they would send him a check for like a couple $100, which is nice,
right,
for one
right.
joke. So there's a lot of people who submit stuff, and that's a big part of this. I don't know if this guy is one of those people who submits jokes. I find it very odd that – how many jokes does he claim that they stole?
Four jokes total.
Okay, so like – if what I understand to be correct is $500, I think, is what they were getting per joke that they would use, like, on The Tonight Show or whatever. So, in essence, this guy maybe owed $2,000.
Right.
$450,000 seems like a lot.
It seems like a lot.
And, I mean, he's got to prove that he did the jokes before the show was recorded. He's got to prove a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, and a couple of them.
And it's low-hanging fruit. Like, it's an airplane joke. It's not like, I don't know.
Yeah, like, there was another one about the Washington Monument. There was a news story that the Washington Monument was like 10 inches shorter than, you know, they did a new like a new survey of the Washington Monument and it came up 10 inches shorter. It was a news story.
Uh-huh.
So they both had jokes about like, oh, it's shrinkage, it's winter, it's cold. So again, yeah, looking at the jokes, they're similar but also a little obvious. I mean, if it's the middle of winter and you're like, oh, the Washington Monument is shorter, you know, 5 people out of 10 in a room are going to come up with the joke that it's, you know.
Yeah, shrinkage.
Yeah.
So there is such a thing as just parallel development,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, like you said, 5 out of 10 people in a room come up with the same punchline. It happens all the time. So it's odd that 4 jokes may have hit.
Yeah.
But who knows?
Well, and who knows? Maybe the guy's got a point, or maybe, like, you know, he's suing the production company. He's suing the production people. Maybe somebody else lifted the jokes and then submitted them to Dakota. I mean, you know, there are a few different scenarios, too. So I suppose, I don't know. Yeah, $450,000 seems like a lot, but
well,
what do I know?
Yeah, I don't buy it. I don't necessarily buy it. I think that what could happen is there could be a staff writer who might follow this guy, mm-hmm. and is, like, proposing the jokes like he wrote them or she wrote them or whatever.
Yeah.
That could be true. Who knows? It'll be interesting.
Yeah.
What else you got?
You know, I mean, I guess if you've got somebody like that with sort of a low follower count, this is not a person who, you know, it's also just playing devil's advocate for this guy. Like,
maybe
it's entirely possible that somebody's like, oh, nobody's gonna know if I steal this guy's jokes, you know, if I steal jokes from somebody famous. So,
and that's the thing, you know, you have to be very careful when you put material out on the internet.
Yeah.
A lot of comics don't put, like, I have, like, when I send film to bookers or to festivals and stuff like that, the videos that I send, I keep private on YouTube so nobody can see them,
right,
except for, like, who I want to send them to, because last thing I need is Carlos Mencia doing a Google search. I'd be like, you know what it's like to be a fat white guy? I don't know.
That's a pretty good Carlos Mencia.
Thank you. I love that guy. Yeah. Not really. All right. Oh, Cat Williams is on.
Yeah, so this is
Cat Williams news.
This goes back a week or so, but I was off last week, so, you know, I don't want to just skip a Cat Williams news
because you're not allowed.
It's slightly out of date. And he hasn't been up to anything in the week in between, fortunately. So this isn't so much about Cat Williams, but so to back up a little bit here, I feel like all the Cat Williams stories involve like a prologue. But so in 2016, Cat Williams was hit with a $1 million lawsuit by a former assistant accusing him of assault and battery. Not really funny.
I kind of remember this.
Yeah. So so what's going on with that case right now is that Matthew Gerwitz of the law firm Venerable LLP is they've been representing Cat Williams in this case.
Okay.
They're asking the court to let them withdraw as the comedian's lawyers because basically they said he's not communicating with them, he's not doing anything he's supposed to be doing. They said he's become unreasonably difficult. He's made it unreasonably difficult for Venable to carry out effective representation.
So what you're telling me is that his lawyers quit on him.
His lawyers are trying to quit on him.
Like, Cat's got a lot of money.
Yeah.
And the lawyers are quitting.
Yep.
Take that however you want
to. Yep.
He's such a problem.
Yeah.
God. But he's just like a dynamo of talent and a problem.
No, that's exactly it. That's what's fascinating is that it's that two-tier like life he's got where, like, on the one hand he's like winning, you know, he's winning Emmys and he's doing these high-profile things and shows and whatever, and he's and then on the other hand he's like
his lawyer's like, we're done.
Like, I can't deal with this guy, and like beating up Uber driver. You know, it's fascinating.
Yeah, well, most Uber drivers deserve a little bit of a beatdown.
I mean,
we love you all.
Yeah.
All right. What else we got?
Okay, so this is a quick one. I was interested in this. Have you seen this new Twilight Zone?
Not one episode yet.
Okay, so I'm bringing this up, and this is a quick one, only because it's they've got a lot of comedians scheduled
now,
for the
Jordan
show.
Peele is a big part of this, yeah?
Yeah, so this is he's basically the producer, he's the host. It's kind of his show. But the first episode had Camille Nanjiani and Tracy Morgan. They've got Adam Scott, Jessica Williams from Trudeau of Queens, Seth Rogen, John Cho, Ike Barinholtz. They've got like a whole, like all the episodes throughout the season have a lot of comedian actors. And I was curious if you had seen it, because the first episode specifically was about Camille Nanjiani and Tracy Morgan as comedians, and there was a whole thing. It was interesting.
Oh, I gotta watch this now.
Yeah, like not being a, it was, it, and of course it was Twilight Zone-y, so I don't want to give too much away, but it was, I'd be interested in the perspective of a comedian on it, because it was very,
okay,
like,
so can
deep,
I guess
dark,
the Twilight
comedian
Zone hook?
Sort of, sure.
Okay. So two comedians who,
I mean, Camille Nanjiani's the primary character, and then Tracy Morgan's sort of a,
okay,
side character.
So can it be, is it something like where there are comedians in a world where laughter doesn't exist?
Because no,
that seems like a Twilight Zone kind of thing.
I mean, just going back to the first story, I don't know if you want to throw that out there without getting some money from it, but no, that's not the premise.
Yeah. God damn you, Jordan Peele!
Season 2, that will be the new episode.
All right, so what else we got?
Okay.
I'm going to watch that. I'm going to go back and watch it.
Yeah, check it out. I'd be interested in your perspective.
Yeah,
so,
I will. I'm just so close to going home, I don't want to talk about it anymore.
I understand. So, finally, this is another quick one. So, you know, we've talked a lot about the various new venues for comedy. So Netflix has cut a deal with SiriusXM satellite radio. So beginning this month,
it's already running and going.
So within the past week or so, I think just a few days ago, they started. Netflix is basically exclusively, but it's Netflix, so it's
providing Netflix
dual
audio.
Yeah, the exclusive Netflix stuff will now also be on SiriusXM. So they're doing
the new station is called Netflix is a Joke Radio.
Yep.
And I have it on my preset saved because when they announced it, I thought it was kind of a cool idea.
Yeah.
So I have it on there. I'm a big fan of Raw Dog.
Okay.
That's one of my favorite go-to stations because I'm a big fan of Ron Bennington. Mm-hmm. If for those of you who don't know who Ron Bennington is, might want to check him out. Very funny comic, has a great show, has a lot of comedians on there, but also I like it because they have a little bit more of the blue comedy on there.
Yeah.
I listen to it more than Comedy Central Radio, but I definitely checked out Netflix as a joke, and it's pretty good.
Good.
They did a good job with it.
Yeah, that'll be it's channel. If you've got satellite radio, it's channel 93, so it's right in with the block of the other, you know, sort of comedy channels. So it's easy enough to find. So I haven't listened to it yet, but I'm interested in that. And again, it's sort of a new, you know, it's a new venue and a new way to get some comedy out there.
I love it.
Yeah.
All right, Ross. Well, thank you for filling in for Awful Brian today.
You got it, man.
You are a treat.
Thank you.
You folks who watch the show, we appreciate you. We love you. Thanks for tuning in. We hope to see you next week with Fred Rubino when he comes through town. Send all of your questions, comments, emails to carlsoncast@gmail.com, and make sure that you're subscribed and leave a review, a positive one, unless it's about Brian. See you next week.
We're trying to get rid of him.